had a pilot at Fox. We did a live show. We wrote a script. It got approved. You know, the dream of dream for comedians is to get your own sitcom, right? I know my blackness. Black, black, black. Shoot. So there we are. We are now then, not only did it get approved, we're shooting it, right? Multi-million dollar budget. We shoot it in front of a live studio audience for Fox. I mean, every big wig at Fox and ABC is there. Everybody loves it. The crowd, it goes crazy. That is black.
That's very black.
See a white child do that. We just all know this is about to get on TV.
Ooh, Lila, this sounds exciting. Two black women, two black creatives about to get their show picked up.
Mm-hmm. I love all this.
Then the pilot comes through. It's hilarious. It's funny. They literally came back and said that they thought it was offensive that there would be a black person who perhaps didn't like her job and they didn't want to see black people portrayed that way. And that killed our show.
Sometimes we can't get in the room because the person, the one of the people near that door handle is a black person.
Hanan, is this black gatekeeping?
We gotta stoop this out.
From Radiotopia and PRX, this is The Stoop.
The Stoop.
The Stoop.
The Stoop.
The Stoop. The Stoop.
Stories from across the black diaspora.
That we need to talk about.
My cousins were water and grease girls, and I couldn't be a water and grease girl.
That's what I'm talking about, ballerina in the hood.
We be Gullah Geechee United people.
When a black woman walks up to the desk in labor, what preconceived notions do you have about her?
I didn't even know we had a hair chart.
The Stoop. I'm Tanya Mosley. In 1987, my sister Anita vanished without a trace. Decades later, thanks to DNA, we found her. But that's only the beginning of the story. She Has a Name is a new audio documentary that explores the search for redemption, confronting trauma, and healing in the face of unimaginable loss. Subscribe now to Truth Be Told Presents She Has a Name, where every revelation brings us closer to the truth.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I was so angry because here we were in a position to facilitate two black women being in charge of their own show, and they wouldn't do it.
This is Frangela.
Hi, my name is Frances Callier.
And hello, my name is Angela V. Shelton.
We are Frangela. We are a comedic duo, African-American female comedic duo.
They're this duo who's made their mark in film and TV. You know, they're actresses, they're comedians.
We have done a ton of things. You know us from Best Week Ever. You know us from Hey Moni.
NPR. Incredible. You know,
NPR.
MSNBC.
Yeah, you name it.
You know.
On the news.
And movies. He's just not that into you. You know, Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. And TV. Frances was Roxy. From Hannah Montana.
Oh, Hannah Montana.
But Roxy, at school I'm Miley, not Hannah. I can't use my bodyguard to fight my battles. Can't you just teach me some of your special moves?
Oh, you mean like this? That's right. Roxy's like a puma, and this kid has got claws.
And they told us about this idea that they had pitched as creatives that was blocked by black people.
It didn't happen. And they think it was a classic case of gatekeeping.
Yeah. Okay, so let them explain what was said about why this project didn't make it.
Angela,
do we have any black friends?
Well, this whole script was about we realized that we didn't have any black friends.
Oh, yeah, that's you.
And so we went looking for black friends. And, like, we went to a sickle cell clinic. We went to a fried chicken store restaurant. I made us hijack a busload of black old people, you know, choir group. Like, when I thought about, wait a minute, we're going to start this discussion on Frances's character isn't 100% in love with her job. Oh, we're screwed. Because we're not even to the stuff that's actually probably challenging.
Yes, because the whole premise at the top of the pilot was, are we black enough? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Dang, we don't know no black people. So what?
We'll just make some new friends.
In 2 days? What are we going to do, pick up a party pack down at Bed Black and Beyond?
We felt, the whole point was, we felt disconnected from our group.
Yep.
And that we realized that we were just in our own little cell, and that, you know, and that was the critique.
Yeah.
Right. So then what do you do? Well, we just don't like, I played a character who just didn't love her job. She worked every day. You know what I mean? Worked and was, you know, wonderful. But
yeah.
they had an idea of, well, we don't want to see a character, a black character who doesn't enjoy their job.
And this is the thing.
And we don't want to see a black character who doesn't do this.
So, Hannah, this is something we've been thinking about, right? These times when there are black people in positions of power or who are in positions to, you know, green light or hire or get your foot in the door. But somehow they just want to keep you out.
And that's not what you expect, right? You feel, you know, you want to feel some kind of solidarity that the black person has your back, you know, that we lift each other up. But it's just not always the case. Have you felt that, Lila?
I hate to say it, but yeah, I've definitely been in a similar situation where I wonder if it was just someone that was trying to, you know, keep things closed. You know, there'll be that one black person in a position where maybe you have plans to pitch something or you have an idea. And they say, instead of you sending your pitch, why don't I reach out for you? And, you know, you don't hear anything back and you follow up and crickets and you're wondering, like, why do I have to go through this person to get through to this other person? And it gets you wondering, you know, I'm fine with reaching out myself. You know, are you on vacation? Can we just, like, can you get back to me about this? It has happened, but I never thought of it as gatekeeping.
And then you don't want to go around the person or, like, above that person, right? Because you want to respect that code, right? The kind of the unspoken, the black code. But it just, sometimes it can just feel like it's off.
Yeah, there's this feeling sometimes that you can piss off one black person at a company where they are the only, and then it has this ripple effect. Like, you know, you want to be on their good side because sometimes they are the only black kin, you know, in that corner. And not having them on your side, you don't know what that can mean.
And for Frangela, they were feeling all of this when it came to this pitch.
And I will tell you, the reason I'm even still animated about it is because there was an opportunity for two black women to be in charge of their own show. Way before Blackish. So, and literally, it was, they got nervous because for a lot of, I think in this industry, I would say people don't get fired for saying no, right? They get fired for saying yes to things. So we were like, oh, we're screwed, because if you can't be a one-note, hyper-good, 100% angelic black person, you can't be on. We're not allowed complexity. We're not allowed to have different feelings. We're not allowed to show ourselves as entire whole human beings. What we are is the one black person they want to show whitedom and that they feel like they can be proud of and put forward. It's so frustrating. So many people, I think, walk through a door and close it behind them.
I definitely think black gatekeeping is real. So absolutely, I've experienced it.
So this is Jennifer Farmer. She's a PR executive, and she's worked in social justice nonprofit work. She's worked in politics in her home state of Ohio and in Washington, D.C.
And I remember when I first moved to Washington, I was so excited to be there. I wanted to get plugged in. And I went to a Black woman who was more established. You know, she had been there for longer, and I asked her for help. You know, who should I meet? What organization should I join? She refused to help me in that way. And for years, I was resentful towards her. I felt like she should have helped me.
Now, this is hard. Jennifer's talking about this woman who is basically a gatekeeper. And she did help Jennifer, but to a certain extent.
Yeah, and Jennifer says gatekeeping is a thing in political circles.
I look at some political leaders, particularly, you know, political leaders who are Black, who have been in their positions or their seats for years. And I sometimes think the reason they won't step aside is because perhaps they worked so hard to get there and maybe because of their own trauma. But I think that's a form of political gatekeeping.
So we've all seen it happen. But Jennifer is trying to dig into why this happens, you know, where it comes from and what we're up against.
When you are the first and only, you experience a range of pressure. You experience the pressure of providing financially for perhaps people in your family who have not achieved the level that you've achieved. People feeling, well, you have this job, now create a bunch of opportunities, and you can only do what you can do.
So it's not just being unhelpful or being jealous or stubborn. There's definitely more there.
And let's just add that Jennifer knows a lot about this because she's written about it a lot. The First and Only is the book she's written, and it's a Black woman's guide to thriving at work and life.
The First and the Only, it's not always about talent. There are people who perhaps could have been first. There are people who've been erased. But then there are people who sometimes aren't able to navigate this complex web of different industries, or perhaps they are penalized unfairly. And so when I talk about being the first and only, I talk about a statement of what is, not what I hope to be. And I also want to be very intentional about acknowledging all the people who attempted, but perhaps the conditions weren't in place for them to thrive.
Now, all of this is reminding me of that scene in Insecure, you know, by Issa Rae, and Molly, who is this high-level attorney, and she's working in a white law firm, and in comes this young, aspiring intern.
Mm-hmm. And her name was Rashida.
Rashida, right. And, you know, Rashida was all about being her authentic self.
I was shadowing Merrill and Johnson on the Chin case, and I had to send myself to HR because Johnson is on.
And Molly did seem concerned that Rashida was in danger.
You in danger, Rashida.
I just want to make sure that no one gets the wrong impression of you. Girl, you know how these white people are. If you want to be successful here, you got to know when to switch it up a little bit.
And so, yeah, Molly is then asked by her white bosses to ask Rashida to tone it down.
Tone it down, Black woman.
Rashida's not quite adjusting to the culture here. It would be great for you to have a chat with her. It would be much better for you to have a conversation with her. I would just hate for anything to get lost in translation.
None of that went too well.
I appreciate your feedback, but I didn't switch it up in my interview with the senior partners, and I didn't switch it up when I was named editor of the Law Review, so I don't think I need to switch it up now.
It's also this subtle thing that happens here where those in power are asking another Black woman to keep her sister Black woman employee in check.
Right. And there's this subtle line that she's walking because Molly is in a position to open doors for Rashida or keep them closed.
Yeah, but we never even know how Molly does or doesn't support Rashida, because before we know it, cut to the next scene, Rashida is sitting in a conference room, the only Black woman at the table.
she gets fired. Mm-hmm. And there are no more Rashidas in that law firm.
So it's this other angle there. Sometimes the gatekeeping can be about image and who gets to represent Blackness in their workplace.
Mm-hmm. And Jennifer Farmer talks about that too, about it not just being about who's in a position to get projects greenlit, but in this case, being in a position, kind of like Molly in Insecure, where she's being asked by her white upper management to keep an eye on what kind of Black they want at the office.
We live in a nation that is racist by default. So for a lot of Black people, we have learned that when we come together in community, when we come together in recreation, that white people sometimes can look at that with skepticism. Many of us can relate to being in the lunchroom pre-pandemic or being in different workplaces. And let's say you're having a conversation with a few colleagues who are Black and a white person coming, someone with authority saying, okay, what are you all doing? Planning to overthrow the place or whatever, you know, and just speaking negatively.
So Jennifer thinks there's a lot of deep and necessary conversations that need to be had around this, and I do too, because some of us need to pinpoint those tendencies, you know, and be aware of them.
Sometimes it breaks my heart when I hear about, you know, leaders who perpetuate harm, particularly leaders who are from marginalized communities, and they perpetuate harm. And when I hear about that, I think, okay, here's a leader who's not addressed the trauma in their own life.
And Jennifer's telling us that there's still so much work to be done when it comes to really thinking about pinpointing in ourselves how all this trauma starts to build up.
We've received so many negative messages about what it means to be Black and what it means to be a Black woman and what it takes to advance. I think if we are not doing our own anti-racism work, our own addressing and recognizing and healing past traumas, when another Black person comes into the space, if we are not healed, if we're not actively working on how to create a beloved community, we can see that person as a threat, or we can have some anxiety. That anxiety or that sense of feeling threatened, that comes from anti-Blackness.
And so in her case, when the woman in Washington wouldn't help her out, Jennifer thought about all of that. So sure, she wasn't happy, but...
What I realized is, okay, you can place your energy there, or you could focus on the fact that this Black woman, she did give you an opportunity to come to DC. She helped you get there. Now, once you got there, perhaps she didn't do what you wanted, but you have to take what you can get and do what you can.
And that takes us back to Frangela.
Hey, it's Hannah from The Stoop, and we wanted to tell you about a new collection from NPR. Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In the collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black stories, Black truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. Hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcasts that center Black voices. It's NPR Noir. Turn on NPR today and hear a range of voices as varied, nuanced, and Black as the country we reflect. Stories should never be about us without us. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, here's Frangela again.
You know, a lot of people were raised a certain kind of way. You know, the parents told them, you got to speak correctly. Mm-hmm. You have to speak the king's English. You can't be walking around looking ghetto. You know, you can't have your hair in locks. You know, you got to straighten your hair. You got to look this way. You got to dress this way. So when that person gets to that environment, you can't discount all of that influence. Mm-hmm. All of that information, and they're carrying all of that around in this white environment. And so all of their decisions, all of their choices get made through that prism, through the prism of, I have to protect blackness. I have to protect this image. So I don't like the way she dresses or presents herself, but she's not educated enough. You know, the black person who, when you walk in, tells you that they went to Harvard. I don't give a are you funny? Can you do your job?
At the end of the day, all you did was stop two black women from getting something that they should have gotten.
You know, I'm a different person than I was then, mm-hmm. You know, and here's the thing. It's like when something like that happens to you, you know, you lick your wounds, you know, because it's devastating. You know, you get so far, you climb the mountain, you are at the peak, and then one pebble knocks you completely down. So what do? You pick yourself back up.
And that's what they did. They're on SiriusXM. They got a podcast. They got a deal with MGM. They were even featured on Oprah.
Oops.
They're doing it.
They are doing it.
Okay, Frangela, I hear you call yourselves Afro-Saxons.
Yes. Now, you understand the Afro part, but we have Saxony tendencies.
Right. Which that basically means is like Francis has a brand new Jetta.
Yeah, but it ain't got no insurance.
Yes. You know, but it's always still lingering. That people maybe don't want you to surpass them, or maybe will tell you straight out that they work so hard to get somewhere and maybe they feel like you need to work just as hard too.
Yeah, but you know, you recognize how much that stings though. It just hurts when that person looks like you. But it's just unfortunate that there are so few of us in some of these places that this gatekeeping has to even happen.
Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily something you can just call out either. You know, it can cost you the job. It can cost you the pitch. So you start to feel stuck.
But Lila, for Frangela, they do see a change happening slowly.
My daughter's 15 years old, and I'm talking woke. I mean, I have not seen more wokeness in my life. They too woke, girl. I ain't seen this kind of blackness since the Panthers, you know, and down for each other. I believe that things are tilting in the other way, you know, it positively.
I wanted to let you know that you smell.
You kidding me? I'm looking at fertilizer on your face.
It's all in my throat too, girl.
It's time to say goodbye to these old friends.
And that's The Stoop.
The Stoop family includes producer Natalie Peart, engineer James Rowlands, music by Daoud Anthony, art by Nima Iyer.
Support for The Stoop comes from California Humanities, a nonprofit partner of the NEH. Find them at calhum.org.
And a special thanks to the NPR Story Lab.
The Stoop is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX, a network of independent, listener-supported, artist-owned podcasts.
Bye.
Bye now.
Hey, it's Hannah from The Stoop. We're excited to tell you that one of our favorite Radiotopia siblings, Ear Hustle, is back with a new season. Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast. Co-hosts Nigel Poor and Erlon Woods have been recently spending time at four California prisons and have a season's worth of funny, surprising, and unforgettable stories to share. In a recent episode, they were able to visit a groundbreaking prison hospice where they spoke to men who are grappling with the reality of dying inside prison. Also coming up this season are stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells, complicated mom-daughter relationships in prison, and incarcerated people who wonder whether they've become too comfortable behind bars. Stories about life on the inside told by those who live it. Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
Radiotopia.